Hi, I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11. Some restrictions
apply. You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM. By going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that David Snyder was declared the winner of the Tannersville mayoral election on March 30th by a count of 103 to 102 votes. The one-vote victory came after Snyder had a two-vote lead after absentee ballots and two cured ballots were submitted to the Greene County Board of Elections. But the board ruled one of the cured or changed ballots invalid. County Elections Commissioner Marie Metzler and Brent Bogatis said that the handwriting on one of the cured ballots did not match the signatures on the ballot envelope or the original registration. Snyder said, and I quote, "I'm honored to have been elected by voters in the village of Tannersville to serve as the next mayor, in the largest election turnout in well over a decade. I'm excited to continue engaging with our neighbors as we move our community forward. I'm ready to get to work and serve our community in a collaborative manner. We have a tremendous opportunity to ensure that basic services are maintained while supporting our residents, businesses, and visitors. I look forward to working with the Board of Trustees as we map out Tannerville's future together. I want to thank Lee McGonigal for his years of service to Tannersville." End quote. McGonigal did not take the loss easily and may appeal. McGonigal said, and I quote, "They refused to open one vote. There was one letter in the whole signature they didn't like," end quote. McGonigal also mentioned voter intimidation at the polls as an issue in the results. McGonigal said, and I quote, "You're not supposed to be harassed, you're not supposed to be intimidated, you're not supposed to film people at the election place," end quote. McGonigal was first elected mayor of Tannersville in 1994, served four terms, and after a brief interruption was elected again in 2007 and has been mayor until now. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Liz Montgomery reports at Porcupine Soup that Catskill schools went into shelter in place on March 30th after police received a false threat targeting the high school. A number of other schools in the Upper Hudson Valley also experienced similar threats this week, and several Berkshire County schools also did on March 28th. On March 27th, there was a school shooting in Tennessee with seven dead, and other threats often follow school shooting. The threat targeted Catskill High School, which has been empty all week because of a broken pipe. Read the full story at Porcupine Soup. Nancy Kern reports at Columbia Green Media that dozens of Athens residents spoke out against a tax break for Athens Generating Plant at a March 29th public hearing held by the Green County Industrial Development Agency. The IDA wants to renew a payment in lieu of taxes or pilot for the power facility located on Route 9W, but many residents disagreed. Athens resident John Cameron said, and I quote, "Athens, unlike Coxsackie, does not have a lot of commercial tax brought into it, and we are being robbed of the commercial taxes which our town desperately needs," end quote. Former Athens Mayor Chris Fitzer said, and I quote, "Look at the businesses around here, little businesses, restaurants, mom-and-pop stores, whatever, none of them get tax breaks," end quote. Former Athens Town Supervisor Lee Parlementaire said, and I quote, "It's a sweetheart relationship between Athens Gin and the IDA. The plant's not going anywhere," end quote. Others complained about natural gas-fired plants hastening climate change. If the tax break is approved, Athens Gin would only pay $5,250,000 from 2024 to 2028, $5,512,500 from 2029 to 2033, $5,788,125 from 2034 to 2038, and $6,077,531 from 2038 to 2043. And you can read more about that story at HudsonValley360.com. Fishing season for trout and striped bass begin in New York April 1st. Brook trout, trout in inland streams, and lake trout fishing seasons run from April 1st to October 15th. For inland trout, only two fish longer than 12 inches are allowed, while lake trout must be at least 21 inches long. Striped bass season runs from April 1st to November 30th, limited to fish not less than 18 inches and no greater than 28 inches. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Our debt to the late, great Randall Robinson. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On January 6, 2021, photojournalist Saul Loeb was in the U.S. Capitol to cover Congress's counting of the Electoral College votes. He ended up shooting some of the most iconic photographs of the ensuing insurrection. One photo shows four white men seated in the Capitol Rotunda. Behind them hangs a massive painting, The Surrender of Lord Cornwallis, depicting George Washington's military victory over the British in 1781. Two of the insurrectionists are looking up, seemingly mesmerized by the massive fresco adorning the Capitol dome. The fresco, the apotheosis of Washington, was painted by Constantino Brumidi in 1865. As described on the website of the architect of the Capitol, it shows, quote, "George Washington rising to the heavens in glory." Loeb's photo brought to mind another insightful viewer of the same work, Randall Robinson, the remarkable African-American author and activist who died this week at the age of 81. Robinson was born in 1941 in Jim Crow, Virginia. After graduating from Harvard Law School, he went to work in Washington, D.C. In 1977, he co-founded TransAfrica to push for a just foreign policy towards Africa and the Caribbean. Randall Robinson was arrested numerous times in some of the most effective U.S. demonstrations against South African apartheid. He was also a dedicated champion of the Haitian people, protesting U.S.-supported coups that have decimated Haiti. Randall Robinson frequently appeared on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. In 2001, speaking about his book, The Debt, What America Owes to Blacks, he described a realization he had while viewing the Capitol Rotunda fresco.
George Washington is there, surrounded by 60 robed figures, and then there's a banner unfurled, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. But all of the 60 are white. And down on the rim of the rotunda, going around like a hat band, is a frieze that depicts scenes from American history, describing our development as a nation from the dawn of discovery, or the age of discovery, to the dawn of aviation. But in these scenes, no Douglas, no Tubman, no Truth, no blacks at all. And then down at the floor level, there are huge paintings set back into this Arcos sandstone, these huge Arcos sandstone blocks, these huge oil paintings. And these paintings, again, depict scenes from American history, no blacks at all. And then I had begun to read on this question to discover that these sandstone blocks had been mined in Stafford County, Virginia, by slaves. They were brought up the Potomac River by slaves. They were hauled to the Capitol and put in place by slaves.
Not long after The Debt was published, Randall Robinson moved with his wife to her native Caribbean island nation of St. Kitts. He explained,
I wanted to live in a society for some time, some portion of my life, where race did not have to be a battlement, that one could get beyond that and not feel it always in one's craw. And it's the kind of thing that it used up so much of my energy and the energy of so many in the United States.
In 2004, I flew in a small chartered plane with Randall Robinson, Congressmember Maxine Waters, and several others to the Central African Republic, CAR. They went to retrieve Haiti's democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who'd been forcibly flown there in a U.S. jet following a U.S.-backed coup d'etat. They met with CAR's dictator, François Bozizé, who said he couldn't release Aristide without U.S. permission. High-ranking Bush administration officials warned the Aristides against returning to the Western Hemisphere. On the return flight to Jamaica with the Aristides, Randall Robinson scoffed, "Whose hemisphere?" Robinson championed those battered by racism, whether in South Africa, in Haiti, or here at home. His book, The Debt, remains one of the most compelling arguments for reparations for the descendants of enslaved people. He wrote in the book's introduction of the Capitol Rotunda, quote, I could not completely place myself outside the spell. Everything about the room was dwarfing, the scale of the art, the size of the round chamber, the height and sheer majesty of the dome. It had combined to achieve the founding fathers' objective, which was, I am certain, to awe, and to hide the buildings and America's secrets. I thought then what a fitting metaphor the Capitol Rotunda was for America's racial sorrows. Randall Robinson went on, in the magnificence of its boast, in the tragedy of its truth, in the effrontery of its deceit. This was the House of Liberty, and it had been built by slaves, he wrote. Most of those insurrectionists who attacked the U.S. Capitol January 6th embraced Donald Trump's demand to make America great again. In his searing 2004 memoir, Quitting America, The Departure of a Black Man from His Native Land, Randall Robinson wrote, "I've tried to love America, but America would not love the ancient full African whole of me. Thus, I could not love America. I had come to know too much of her work," he wrote. For Randall Robinson's lifelong commitment to racial justice, we remain in his debt. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
I'm Tom Rowe, Ian Aker, with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Sunday, April 2nd. And we begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Citgo in South Caro has gas at $3.32 a gallon. That's the lowest according to the Gas Buddy website. Then the water temperature in the Hudson River in Albany is at 40.34 degrees Fahrenheit. And on average, over the past 10 years on this date, it's averaged 40.37 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's almost exactly average right now. National Weather Service in Albany predicts a partly sunny Sunday, gradually becoming more sunny as the day goes on, with a high of just 39. And that's partially because it's breezy with a northwest wind, 14 to 21 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour. Sunday night should be mostly clear with a low around 25. Northwest wind, 5 to 7 miles per hour, spinning local windmills. Monday, there is a 20% chance of showers after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 56. And a southeast wind, 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming south, 12 to 17 miles per hour in the morning. Monday night, a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 8 p.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 42. And then Tuesday, there is a 20% chance of showers. Otherwise, it'll be mostly cloudy with a high of 58 and a low around 44. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. This is your WGXC Wave Farm Animal Report, and we're listening to the spring peepers that popped out on April 1st as temperatures warmed above 70 degrees. We've seen fuzzy caterpillars, wasps, deer, of course. And more. But it's beginning to sound like spring. So we add in some other noises from inside the Wave Farm Pond and Zach Poff's Pond Station. Quintron's traffic sacks picking up the sounds of passing vehicles on Route 23. Quintron's weather warlock turning the changing temperature, precipitation, sunlight, and wind into sound. And the test site for Acoustic Commons, the microphone in the woods at Wave Farm. This is your WGXC Wave Farm Animal Report for the first week in April 2023.
March 28th, the Care for Immigrant Families held a rally at the state capitol to call for the passage of the Access to Representation Act in the state budget, as well as $120 million in funding to provide legal representation to individuals in immigration court. The governor has proposed $43 million in funding in her budget, while both houses of the legislature have included the funding in their one house budget proposals. They have not included the law needed to implement it. We hear from Murad Awada, the executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition, Sarah Rogerson of the Justice Center at Albany Law School, Gloria with the Workers Center of Central New York, and Assemblymember Harvey Epstein.
And good afternoon, everyone. My name is Murad Awada. I'm the executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition. We cannot leave the state capitol without ensuring that the Access to Representation Act and the funding needed, which is $120 million, is invested in legal and social services in the final budget. The Access to Representation Act is the first in the nation kind of program that would guarantee access to legal representation for all who need it and are facing deportation. Our current system is set up so that if you can't afford an attorney, you are left without one, and you are up against a government-trained lawyer whose sole job is to have you removed from your community, your family, and this country. And that ain't right, is it? It is appalling that in a state like New York, it's unthinkable that so many people are left without an attorney and basic access to justice. It's time for New York to be a leader by passing the Access to Representation Act, guaranteeing justice and due process for all, and ensuring the funding is also allocated. So first up, join me in welcoming Sarah Rogers with the Justice Center at Albany Law.
I've been an immigration lawyer for the better part of 20 years plus, and thank you. It's been my honor. I've been a lawyer and a professor in upstate New York for the better part of 12 years, and we have a strong, dedicated network in upstate New York, which for the immigration purposes includes everything north of Poughkeepsie. So can I hear y'all scream and shout for upstate New York? And in over 20 years, let me tell you what hasn't changed in this system. What hasn't changed is that there are not enough lawyers. Not enough. And contrast that with the fact that people are left alone to fight a racist deportation machine that is well-funded under every single president. Everyone. The federal government is not moving on this, and New York can. But what isn't changing in New York? In New York, immigrant New Yorkers north of Poughkeepsie have to go to Buffalo in order to go to court. For some people, that's 5 hours. For some people, it's six. Just to go to court or to see their loved ones who have been caught up in this machine and put in detention in Batavia, right next door. So when you talk about how lawyers in Albany can represent folks in deportation, that's a 9-hour trip just for one court appearance. Never mind what the families are going through in order to make that trip 1, 2, 3, 7 times over maybe 15 years, represented or not. And that's not right. Add to that the most recent development in upstate New York, which is international collaboration to keep that deportation machine running and close our borders further. It's a disgrace. New York can do something. I heard a lot of people around the family separation crisis under Trump say, what can we do? What can we do in upstate New York? This is what we can do. This is what happens. Lawyers need to show up. And we need to fund them. Budgets are moral documents. So does New York care about people alone, sometimes 3, sometimes 4 years old, alone, to face an immigration machine? With all the education of a lawyer, with all the advanced degrees, alone, and to navigate a system that folks could do if they had representation to untangle the mess that our immigration laws have become, again, messier under every single president that I've been a lawyer. It's not enough. The rates of folks with the success rates for folks with lawyers are much, much higher. The math is clear. It is not a moral quandary. It is obvious. Give folks lawyers, increase these success rates, and keep immigrant New York families together.
My name is Karen. I will tell you a little bit about my own process and why it's very important to pass the Access to Representation Act. I fled from Mexico and arrived in the United States with my 3-year-old daughter exactly 4 years ago. Since they let us out of the immigration center in Texas, they gave us a year to apply for our asylum case. It was very difficult for me to get a pro bono lawyer, so I had to opt for a private one. Their first service cost me more than $4,000 for the application without a work permit. I need a work permit to be able to work and pay the lawyer. And after that application, I had even more expenses, one after another. This law is very important to me, not only to me, but to our entire community who have to choose to pay for a lawyer before meeting their household or family needs. As long as they aren't deported, that's what matters. Thank you, and we hope this year we can pass this.
We next hear from Assemblymember Harvey Epstein.
The stories we've heard today, unfortunately, are not new. Before I went to the legislature, I ran a legal services office in New York City, and we represented thousands of New Yorkers who just needed a chance. And the way they got a chance is through lawyers and organizers coming together to make a difference in their lives. And we know how critical the organizing is, because that's why you're all here today. And we know how important the lawyers are, because they understand the legal system, and people get screwed without it. So the question we have to answer is, are we okay with some New Yorkers getting less benefits than the other just because they don't have access to a lawyer? Are we okay with the legal system that talks about fairness, equity, and justice, keeping in two-tiered system, one system that says, okay, you have access to a lawyer, you will get good representation, and another system that says, you don't have access, you will get screwed. Are we okay with that?
No.
So the answer has to be that we have to make a commitment now for immigrant New Yorkers, because most of us are immigrants. The question is when we came here, and we came here through a process, and we have to understand that new New Yorkers who are immigrants now have a process that we need to protect them from. So the answer has to be now. The answer can't be next year or the year after, because how many...
It's critical that our leaders pass the Access to Representation Act and invest the resources, which are $120 million, in the state budget, which is due.
So, Murad, what actually was put into the One House budget resolutions on funding, you know, legal representation, and where do things stand with the governor?
So, as you know, in the One House, in the Senate and Assembly, we've historically had great support from both houses in ensuring that our communities are getting their fair share of resources. The Assembly has chipped in, the Senate has chipped in to Kathy Hochul's own first $43 million investment in legal services to bring the total amount to $120 million. That's a great first step. We need to see that $120 million become reality in the final budget, but we also need to see Access to Representation Act become a reality as well. Because without us building the ecosystem and the infrastructure for legal services in the state of New York, we're going to continuously be facing the same hurdles that we've been seeing before without building the infrastructure and the resource capacity that we need right now. So we're strongly urging Governor Hochul, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and Speaker Carl Hastie to ensure that they are also investing not just the money, but the Access to Representation Act in the final budget so that we take it over the finish line.
Thank you. This has been Mark Dunley from the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.